Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present, with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, welcome to another episode of The Political Football, a podcast series from These Football Times. Football is a global phenomenon. People who follow it can fall into an obsessive mindset where victory or defeat for their national or club team can define their lives, attitudes and understanding of the world around them, both locally and globally. Over time, and in so many places around the world though, the game's ability to intoxicate and elicit unquestioned devotion to a cause has often been manipulated by states, parties, other political organisations or indeed individuals seeking a way to persuade, influence and increase their power by using football as a political tool. This series looks at examples of such scenarios, considers their context, cause and effect, and how the game has been used by such political forces, and also questions whether, at times, footballers kick back or provide the means to counter these forces. This is The Political Football, and today we're going to focus on another football's continental governing bodies, CONMEBOL. The South American Football Confederation is the continental governing body of football in South America, strangely enough, and it is one of FIFA's six continental confederations. I'm Gary Thacker, and I'm delighted that my good friend Stu Horse is co-hosting this series with me. How you doing, Stu?
Hey, Gary. You okay?
Yeah, good, thanks, matey. It's a little bit cold over here today. It's sort of almost like the first day of non-summer. I've had to put the flip-flops away for the non-summer period, which is a bit galling. But, you know, yes, otherwise I'm fitting ready to roll. About yourself?
Yeah, don't think I feel bad for you in any way, shape or form, just because you've had to put your flip-flops away. All good. Looking forward to this one. As always, love a bit of intrigue and a bit of discussion, certainly where it's related to the governing of football, shall we say. I think it's going to be excellent, this one.
It is, and obviously South America, you know, along with Europe, is one of the main football powerhouses of the world. So, you know, CONMEBOL is a massively important federation. So who's our guest anyway, matey?
So our guest today is Freddie Clayton. Freddie's a freelance sports journalist, previously reporting from Latin America, but now working with Sky Sports, recently the Daily Telegraph. Also produced a piece recently for The Economist on the European South American football wealth gap. So obviously his experience and knowledge of football and politics in this region make him the ideal guest to guide us through what is undoubtedly going to be a little bit of a tangled web of CONMEBOL.
Yeah, sounds good to me. How you doing, Freddie?
Yeah, doing good, thanks. I'm spending a couple days in Oxford, which is nice, getting away from London. So, enjoying myself. So, dialing in from some ivory towers.
Okay. Lovely.
Is it the Dreamy Spires or is that Cambridge?
Oh, it's, I think it's Dreamy Spires, but they're also ivory towers. I love them both.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit about, give us a little of a brief background to CONMEBOL and why it's an important, interesting subject to discuss with regards to political football.
Yeah, so CONMEBOL, like UEFA, is a, you know, the South America's equivalent of the sort of 10 South American nations, and kind of, as UEFA does, organises Copa America, Copa Libertadores, the South American equivalent of the Champions League. And we're going to be looking today at the kind of reflection between and mirroring of the state of South American politics at the moment as reflected and in CONMEBOL, and how both have sort of demonstrated over the last few years and indeed over the last few decades a kind of farcical administration that the two certainly mirror each other. Essentially, we're looking at elected bodies not fulfilling their duties to those who put them in power, or the fans that wish they'd just make some common sense decisions every now and again.
Yeah, I guess anybody who sort of knows anything about your wife, and even if they didn't know anything about CONMEBOL, would hardly be surprised by that sort of comment.
Exactly.
It seems to be endemic in football administration, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and it is something that we see, you know, and we talked about doing this topic a few months ago, actually, and even in the last few weeks, and these are topics we'll get onto, specific examples we'll get onto, where we've got a fair few ludicrous and farcical decisions made just in the last 10 days by both UEFA and CONMEBOL. So if you're familiar with the work of UEFA and how silly that can look, then, you know, just imagine it's the same but a bit worse. South America. Yeah,
this sounds like it's going to be a good one, Stu. Any quick thoughts?
It does. No, I'm just quite interested. I mean, obviously, UEFA with its sheer volume of member states, and I wouldn't for a minute give UEFA any form of free pass with regards to its organisation and common sense. But I suppose, obviously, with a far greater reduced number of member countries, should we say, I would like to think, or maybe not, maybe it's converse, and I'm sure, you know, Freddie will talk us through this, whether it might be slightly easier due to the fact that it's only managing a smaller number.
Yep. I mean, it's a fair assumption. It doesn't quite work out that way.
I did kind of figure, but it was just more of a common sense. If you've got less to look after, then surely it must be easier, is what you would think. Yeah. But
it's what you would think.
Yeah.
So what's your political particular interest in CONMEBOL, Freddie?
So, yeah, as I said before, as you introduced me, I've lived in the region. I lived in South America, sort of working my way through Peru, Bolivia, Chile and Argentina, kind of, and reporting on the leagues from each country and kind of doing a little bit of work, looking specifically at the money that kind of... and where that's all going and how it kind of passes between nations. And there's more specifically lately, as you said, for The Economist, looking at how that money has, whether European big money has made its way into Latin America, which it hasn't. So my interest in the region generally comes from a real passion for the topic, and it having sort of been the way I worked my way into this industry was looking specifically at Latin America and loving it as a continent and wishing it just worked a little better, as we all do, I guess, with everywhere we live. Just kind of hoping that it would take a turn and things would just kind of sail smoothly for at least 12 months. Don't really get much of that. And at the moment, we're really talking in a time where we're in the midst of so many elections, both this side of the Atlantic and the other side, especially in Latin America. They're all kind of going on at once. And we're also looking at a time where, as we'll get into, some specific examples of poor decision-making over there when it comes to CONMEBOL especially.
Yeah. I mean, as Stu sort of alluded to in the introduction, sounds like, you know, you're the ideal guy to sort of talk to us about CONMEBOL. Just a quick question that comes to mind. You mentioned the countries that you've experienced over in South America. What's the perception of CONMEBOL? I mean, generally, is it held in as much contempt as UEFA is broadly with the football fans in Europe?
I would say that when you have someone like Messi, who was banned, if you remember, 3 months from international football last year for his words against CONMEBOL, you have someone who's sort of as worshipped as he is saying, you know, let's not get involved in CONMEBOL's corruption. When you have that, and of course he did apologise for his statement, but he said it. These are the words that reach people. And, you know, when you're sending people around the continent, travelling to, and then to Madrid to watch the Copa Libertadores final, you're going to start thinking, perhaps the administration is not quite up to scratch. Also, when we're talking about the FIFA, the big FIFA scandal, we'll get into this in more detail, the big FIFA scandal in 2015 and the CONMEBOL reps who were really tied up in that. Yeah, I would say that the coverage that UEFA gets, the negative coverage by the UK press that UEFA gets and sort of rightfully gets for sort of its poor punishments, especially when it comes to tackling racism, perhaps more frequently in the news, UEFA, but CONMEBOL, when it is in the news, it makes a splash, but perhaps not as universally hated as we kind of all think of UEFA and how silly they all seem and how kind of ridiculous and lacking in common sense we think of them.
Yeah, Stu?
Yeah, it's funny, obviously, with the question you asked there, Gary, I'd written down another question for Freddie. With regards to obviously a European perception of CONMEBOL would be probably, I would argue, quite maybe stereotypical. And I was just wondering, obviously, with you sort of living there, working there and following football there so closely, what's the perception of UEFA from the South American perspective?
It's a good question, and I can't say I could tell you the answer because I wouldn't. The South American following of European football, from what I saw, and we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about the everyman fan, it's about, you know, watching the Champions League or the big international games. We're not talking about whether Bulgaria has been fined enough for racist chants. So that's not the kind of news that's going to make it into sort of rural Bolivia. So so I would say in that sense, I'd be interested to find out, you know, if they've, you know, got, if, you know, that your everyday fan has an opinion about UEFA, just like I wouldn't know for certain whether, I could go into sort of the Amex stadium and ask people what they thought about CONMEBOL. Not really sure.
It's funny because you always sort of assume that your neighbours or that somebody else always has it better than you do, and I just wonder whether their perception of UEFA was more of a more well-run, a slightly more common sense organisation.
They probably assume it is better run, and that's not even to say it isn't, but I imagine they would be surprised to learn that UEFA. Yeah. Is always, you know, in the news for its blunders rather than. When was the last time a story came about how great something UEFA? Yeah, the Nations League, that's been a success, I guess. So there we go.
We got together eventually, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. There we go. We can't say we didn't. We weren't fair.
Even a broken clock's right twice a day. Isn't it?
Exactly. Nations League was that moment.
Yeah. Stu has this well-earned reputation for asking impossible questions. Are there?
It's too much thinking time when I'm sat here just thinking. It's dangerous.
Yeah. It's also probably worth mentioning that I'm sure you're right that the punishment for Bulgaria didn't reach the rural Bolivia. The question is, did it even reach the areas of rural Bulgaria? Bolivia, yeah. So can you give us a little bit of a history about CONMEBOL, and, you know, is it a sort of political and financial, is there a sort of dominant country there, or is there a strong personality?
Well, headquarters in Paraguay at the moment, but I feel like that's sort of not necessarily the most important thing here. Yeah, the history of it is set up really like UEFA, is sort of the need for a federation or sort of a federal body here that's sort of overseeing the continent and its football and allowing, and someone who's sort of administrating or facilitating the means by which those teams from Brazil can play, teams in Argentina, and sort of similar to UEFA, filling that same role. How can we make this happen and sort of get teams out and about the continent? And similarly, when it comes to international football, which is sort of I think at the foundations of why it started, you know, having an organization that represents the South American nations as on the international stage and saying, look, this is our body that represents, and we can go to FIFA now and we have, you know, these delegates, et cetera, et cetera. The history is checkered, as I'm sure you can imagine. Most recently sort of marred in 2015 when arrests were made fairly seriously when it came to the Americans investigating the corruption scandal within FIFA. CONMEBOL was present, arrested. Since then, since 2015, the new administration and has tried to really distance themselves from the previous one by sort of clamping down and saying, look, you know, we're not like them. We're not gonna turn our head the other way at any given opportunity. What we're gonna do is do the opposite, which is something we can get into, which has led to difficulties and again, like it comes down to sometimes maladministration and a lack of common sense and decision making, because the alternative to all-out corruption has been to kind of really clamp down in kind of ridiculous ways. Imagine the sort of VAR of administration.
oh my god, I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah. exactly. So and we'll get into that. But so yeah, that's sort of a brief history behind its introduction, behind its foundation, and its sort of recent history. But it's important to know that the administration since 2015, since the FIFA scandal, has been about separating themselves from that, but with mixed success.
Right. Yep, Stu?
I'm really sorry for it. It's another sort of a historical question. You may not know the answer to that, and that's fine. But it's something that I have like a particular interest in. And again, I'm really sorry because I'm asking you to give the opinions of an entire continent and you probably don't even know what they are. But obviously, Havelange was FIFA president for a long time, sort of 74 to about 98. And obviously, that would give CONMEBOL a real sort of foothold, really, if you like, in world football. But since then, it's been very much European-dominated through Blatter and Infantini. And again, it's one of those... I certainly am of the opinion that there should be a maximum number of terms certainly for the FIFA president, based on, you know, the domination of Havelange and Blatter. And I just wondered whether in South America they feel, I suppose, a little bit, I suppose it's colonial, you know, it comes back to that colonial impression of, you know, Europe. And I just wonder what, you know, how they feel about that lack of representation at the very highest level for what has been, you know, sort of over 20 years now.
I would say that, again, without wanting to speak for just the sort of your every fan, that the issues domestically and even continentally are sort of more present and more pressing than whether FIFA and its kind of Eurocentric representation is having a negative effect on South America. I would have thought that, you know, if you're a fan in Chile and you haven't been able to watch your team for 3 weeks because of the complete chaos over there, you're probably not so much thinking about whether Infantino is up to it. But that's not to say that these are the things that ultimately we have the sort of privilege of worrying about FIFA, because in the Premier League and it is functioning and the Champions League functions. We don't question that the final will be played in Kiev if it said it was going to be played in Kiev 3 years ago. These are just not things we think about. We don't have to worry about whether Wembley will fall over or fans will die, or if you're, and so, you know, and sometimes, you know, the worst it gets for us is, can, you know, enough people from Liverpool get to Madrid for the right price? That's kind of our kind of Western concern. It's not, and so that gives us, yeah, like I said, the privilege of worrying about FIFA. Domestically in South America, I feel that there are bigger fish to fry right now. And so that's what I probably say, not to say that there aren't people who do feel hard done by Eurocentric FIFA, but there's a lot going on there, that I would say was a little bit more unfair. And, you know, they can't worry about everything.
No, that's fair. I mean, like you say, a more immediate pressing problem. Like you say, if you can't get watch your team, then, like you say, clearly it doesn't matter who's going to get another 4 years in charge in Switzerland.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Thank you.
It's interesting you mentioned about, taking... I wanted to come up with a couple of Liberty Doors in a moment. You mentioned about taking that to Madrid. And I'm sure you've heard that there's talk about taking the Champions League final to the USA in a couple of years. So, so perhaps whatever changes, you know, it becomes the same. So I want to ask you about the Copa Libertadores. That we mentioned that this is in their purview. And this is the second... I would say the second major club competition in on the planet, second only to the Champions League. And if you live in South America, you might consider it the prime one. So, does the maladministration from CONMEBOL leak into the organisation of that?
So again, so we can really talk about this is where we can get into our first example here. And this is since we agreed we talk about this topic. I mean, even the last couple of weeks, so we've got, you know, well-publicised protests in Chile over something that started about Metrofares and has now sort of expanded into a whole a real sort of a mass protest against against a whole number of things has led, as I alluded to the suspension of Chilean football for 3 weeks now, and the Copa Libertadores final was due to be played in Santiago, which, to be fair to CONMEBOL, would have been seen as the probably the safest choice in South America. Santiago, you know, if you've been there, is a developed city. Euro-esque in its sort of functionality. It feels like a safe bet. But ultimately, and this is not CONMEBOL's fault, but the finals had to be moved to Lima because of the protests in Santiago, and the final was due to take place on the 23rd of November. So what we've got here is two things. First of all, we've kind of got this kind of this mirrored effect with between CONMEBOL and between sort of what you could say is the Chilean government, where you've got two bodies thinking everything will be fine, because this has been a last minute decision, you know, and the word was it'll be fine, Santiago will be fine, we'll have the final in Santiago. The government thinking the protests will die down, CONMEBOL thinking, okay, it's going to be fine, both people thinking, okay, let's not rush into a decision. And that's still, I guess, fair. But a lot of this boils down to what I want to get into about CONMEBOL and governance in general and what happens with UEFA. It's just fundamentally not paying attention to the people or the fans. It's just not hearing what they are saying. And so Chilean government not really paying attention to just how big this movement was in Santiago, and then relaying to CONMEBOL that everything will be okay, and them therefore making the decision that we won't move the final until it's absolutely necessary at the last minute. Then, on top of that, kind of what you've got there is poor communication and just a kind of like willful ignorance of what is really going on with people and Chileans. And then what you've got is moving it to El Monumental in Lima, a stadium that is potentially a death trap. And so you've got and what else you're asking for is Flamengo fans and River Plate fans to with all their flights booked to now say, okay, you've got to fly somewhere else, and it's going to be even further away, and it's going to be really expensive because obviously flights have gone crazy, crazy in price. So again, not really thinking about the fans here, and then putting them in a stadium which is potentially unsafe and ill-equipped to handle such a fiery occasion. So on sort of three different levels here, you've got decision making that has at no point really paid any attention to what at a sort of really fundamental level the event is, which is thousands and thousands of fans gathering together to watch a match of football. At no point has it as what the logistics are, this really basic level being considered here. And so what you have instead is decisions of convenience that seem to be very inconvenient for who matters. And you end up with this kind of just trail of disaster, which is so typical, it seems, of football's governing bodies, and CONMEBOL especially, because it's only a year ago that Boca versus River second leg was taking place in Madrid. And when you've got it's like a real two in a row kind of fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice kind of thing here, because you really have, okay, it's not in Madrid this time, but it's in Lima, and this comes after the unpopular decision to change it from a two-legged final where one game is played in each of the... this is the first year that the final was going to be in an independent venue. So they went for Santiago, a safe decision. Okay, fine. If you're going to make an unpopular decision, at least make it a safe one. And there was a spanner in the works for the Chilean protests. Okay, how do you respond to that? oh, no, now it becomes a mess. And so when we talk about maladministration, common sense is important to consider here, and there just seems to be a real lack of it. And again, just a real kind of not looking at what would make it easiest, what would be easiest for the fans. How can we actually make this event good? How can we be popular? And so it's hard to explain, but essentially that's kind of the last few weeks in a nutshell. Every step of the way, there's just decision making which has a big question mark around it.
Yeah, Stu.
This is great, Freddie. I mean, granted, it's not great for the clubs. Don't get me wrong, but I'm quite interested in a bit more detail about it. So this decision for Lima then, and it's certainly, and I'm no way suggesting this is what will happen, but you talk about the ground and a potential death trap, and you only have to think back to the European Cup final at Heysel and a stadium that wasn't ready for a game of such magnitude. But the decision for it to go to Lima, I'm quite interested in, was that a voluntary or a hand up, if you like, from the Peruvians, or was it a desperate sort of plea from CONMEBOL as to who can have it, or was it sort of implied that that you should have? I'm quite interested as to how they arrived at this decision and what thinking went on behind that.
So as far as I know, it was a sort of hand up from Peru kind of a situation where they said, look, okay, we've got the... And they do, they can host it. There is the infrastructure in Lima. It's well linked to other South American cities. It's not in... what we're talking about here is we're not in Brazil, because Flamengo, a Brazilian team. Yeah. We're not in Argentina because River Plate. We can't do it in Santiago, the closest and safest bet. As a capital city, Lima is kind of the next obvious option. Asunción, like in Paraguay, I don't think necessarily there's the infrastructure there or the stadiums or to do this. Bolivia, you're entering into sort of a whole load of altitude issues. And it's, even though it may be closer, plus infrastructure issues, plus logistical handling, airports not being quite... Lima is the next obvious choice, and they did say, we can do this. So you kind of... you could make a case for Colombia, but we're talking much further. So it's not to say it doesn't make sense to put the final in Lima. It's just, it's kind of the what circumstances and decisions put you in a position to at this point where the only option was Lima. Because, and like I said, talked to you about that trail of decision making earlier, where unluckily Santiago did become ill-fitted to this. But when we're talking about CONMEBOL and its decisions to sort of get rid of the two-legged final, sort of along the way, you've got to look at the context again and what's really happening on the ground and look at the continent that you're working with and think, if something goes wrong, what happens next? And if plan B doesn't really work for anyone who wants to attend this thing, then you have to really look at before plan A, you have to really kind of take a step back and look at everything, because things happen again. Latin America, South America has, at the best of times, turbulent political situations in many of its capital cities. This is not like it could, it was really unlucky. It's election time in South America, and so to be in a position where the option was Lima, I think putting yourself in that position is the mistake. It is poor in itself.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated about this subject, but I'm also conscious there's stacks of other things we want to get onto. But I just want to ask you one, which sort of sprung to mind as you were talking there, is this as you say, the politics in South America is a pretty febrile environment at any time. So these things are always likely to or potentially blow up. Why did the change from you know, I won't say a safe, but a sort of less dangerous format of playing home and away legs? Because then you've got, although the Boca and River Plate one was a bit difficult last season for different reasons, but you know, that seemed to be why change?
Well, I mean, I'm sure part of this was looking at, you know, the European equivalent, the Champions League, and thinking, well, they do a neutral venue every year and it works just fine. But it's like kind of saying, okay, well, if it works for them, it works for us. But it's not true when you're working with different people's different place, different continent, different everything. And so what you and we might say, okay, if it's the kind of thing that a few years ago I might have thought, oh, it seems crazy that they do a two-legged final, because a final isn't, it's not quite the same, is it, where you have the first leg in. I mean, it doesn't, I'm not saying that's perfect, but it was something that was it was part of the competition. It was, you know, to play on both sides, especially when Latin and South American fandom is so intense.
Yes,
you want to give both sets of home supporters their opportunity to love and enjoy the biggest club match of the season. Yes. And in many ways, it would be glorious if you had the kind of same intensity as the Champions League final. Because, and you know, you only need to look at the two-legged games the Champions League has seen lately to know that two-legged football is sometimes just brilliant beyond belief.
Yeah.
Look at Spurs City last season. It's just magic sometimes. And again, indeed, United PSG last year. Yeah, really, really good two-legged fixtures. And I'm sure you've been over this in podcasts before, and it won't be strange to people to hear that, you know, Latin American fandom is a different beast for the most part, to especially another level to PL support.
Yeah.
And so it is something quite pure about giving both sets of home fans the chance to see their clubs the biggest game.
Yeah.
And that there is something lost from a neutral venue. Because when you have that neutral venue, obviously you've got all the corporate seats, and then you've got who can afford to go and the travelling fans. You don't necessarily know if you're going to get the best of your support. It's not to say you won't. It's not even to say it's unlikely, but it's to say there's going to be less. There's 90 minutes less football, first of all, which whether one is better than the other is not necessarily the point here. Well, the point is that it was working in the Copa Libertadores to do two-legged. Just because it didn't last year, they'd already made the decision to go to one leg last year. It looks as though, okay, we had to have the second leg in Madrid once, so we should just make it one game. That's not what happened. That was always going to be the last two-legged final.
Yeah.
It just
seems a strange thing, but, you know, it's like saying, you know, well, that dress looks nice on my wife, so I'll wear it as well. I mean, you know, certain American football and European football aren't the same thing, as you quite rightly pointed out. There's massive differences. And, you know, if you asked the fans of both clubs, would you rather play at a neutral venue I'd have been in Santiago in a calm period, or a chance to see your team play at home, an away leg. I'm fairly certain which way that'd go, and it just seems that, again, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's the fans seem to be the last people taken into consideration when these decisions are made.
Yeah, and that is what happens so often when we're talking about UEFA, when we're talking about FIFA, when we're talking about Commonwealth. Like, who's talking to the fans here? Because, and again, it's easy to draw upon really recent examples with Bulgaria getting a pitiful fine. You know, it was less than David Bentner wearing Paddy Power boxes.
Yeah.
For just extraordinary racism from a huge section of fans for a large portion of the game that almost caused. I mean, really, if we're talking, we'll be seeing walkouts soon, I'm sure. And so, when you're in a position like that, and then the fine is as pitiful as it was, and even there are just so, I don't know. In England, especially right now, where obviously things are very divided over, this was not a divisive issue. Fans all believe there should have been greater punishment, and ultimately it was the England football players who were subject to this abuse. And so, why is this decision so lenient? And we're all trying to fish for answers and wonder why they so easily turn a blind eye. But these are the decisions that are made by these governing bodies over and over again. And, you know, I think there is a good movement at the moment. People are sick of it. And we need to see walkouts, especially in that issue. But getting onto what I was sort of alluding to earlier with CONMEBOL and it moving away from corruption, especially in 2015, and having this new administration that clamps down, what we've been seeing with CONMEBOL, which again kind of has its roots in just poor decision making, is the number of games that are null and void because players are found to have been not registered in time for football matches, and the game gets played out, and then the club appeals within 24 hours that there was an ineligible player, and then that game is given as a 3-0, and so you've got fans paying for games, going to these games, watching these games, enjoying their side win. 3 days later, they found out there was an ineligible player. Why are these things not happening? Why is there not a registration system that works before games? This has happened 3 or 4 times in the past 2 or 3 years, where high-profile matches are in the Copa Libertadores are null and void because a player wasn't registered. How is this happening in such a high-profile tournament, which has an administrative body? And on top of that, why is the decision now, where they're really clamping now, whereas before they would have seemed to turn a blind eye to this stuff, they're saying, no, that game is null and void, it's 3-0 to the other team. These are not necessarily the answers. And I'm not saying I've got the answers, but what's happening, again, is not paying attention to the fans who have paid a lot of money to see games that now have meant nothing. So, again, you've just got more and more examples here of just reactionary decision-making that has not, and the process in which new decisions have been come to that have not involved any sort of, like, consideration of the people who actually want to enjoy the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I fully respect your sort of comment about, you know, not knowing all the answers, you know, who does, but yeah. It sounds to me like CONMEBOL don't even know what the perishing questions are, so... Anyway, let's do.
I can't quite get my head around not the conversation that we're having. I can get my head around that. I'm not saying I thought UEFA were any better or any worse, but, you know, as you sort of mentioned there, Freddie, there's this sort of drive towards distancing themselves from corruption. And so they've almost taken it to the nth degree the other way. But it, from what you're saying, everything seems so reactionary. Yeah. And so that's happened, therefore we'll do this. Oh, but that made that happen, so therefore we'll do this. Yeah. At some point, it seems like there needs to be almost brakes put on, and everyone just take a step back and go, right, where actually do we want to go? Now, and I suppose, is there... Well, I'm not sure what I'm trying to ask here. Is there anybody of any substance saying this? I mean, obviously the fans will, but as you've mentioned earlier, you know, the fans are always the last ones to be listened to. But, you know, it seems to me like I don't see how this can change, or this is going to change, if this makes sense. It's almost like a perpetual sort of inward spiral where they react to every setback without thinking about it or the consequences, and thereby bringing up another setback from it.
Yeah, and you're right. It is, if you're forced into making a reactionary decision, then you've got to question the context into which you had to be reactionary. And usually that itself has come from a previously reactionary decision. So they are stuck in a rabbit hole. So again, when you're talking about a way out of this rabbit hole, though, it is a tough one. It is possible, optimistically, to consider that there could be better people in charge who would put the brakes on and say, look, what you've been doing hasn't worked. There's also, when we're talking about the kind of, again, it comes back to what I was saying earlier, when we can, you know, point and laugh at UEFA and CONMEBOL, but again, that's a privilege earned by having a sort of functional democracies that allow us to look at these things. I mean, I say functional, I mean more functional.
Less unfunctional.
Yeah, exactly. And So we can do that. We can ask these questions about our governing bodies. But again, you know, you're asking earlier about what do people think about UEFA over there. Well, it's also what do they think about CONMEBOL, because it's also what do they think about the administration of their town, and you know, was the last election, you know, was that legit? Was it valid? You know, we're talking about a group of fans who can't at the moment really afford to be worrying about CONMEBOL and making those movements, because their movements and the activism and the protesting and the talk and the journalism is being those efforts and energies are elsewhere because of the state of things in politics so often. So it's hard to get a movement together, especially one that's continent-wide against CONMEBOL, when at any given point someone's usually dealing with something worse. You look in Bolivia, Morales has just announced today that there's going to be another election because the last one had an inexplicable 24-hour pause in vote counting and was announced by the organization, the sort of auditing organization, to have been null and void. So you can't be having, you've got protests in the street for that reason, and the same in Santiago against all sorts of poor policy making in the Chilean government. You can't be expecting these people to put a brake on what really matters about their livelihoods and then say, okay, and also annoyingly that player was ineligible for a game but it should have stood anyway. You know, these are just things that they don't matter as much, and it's just a kick in the teeth from CONMEBOL. You know, these people, they get bruised and battered by your government, and then CONMEBOL says that your team also lost 3-0 the other day when they actually won 1-0 because a player was, like, not registered in time because CONMEBOL didn't do the paperwork. So, yeah,
Is there an air of, not taking advantage of the situation, but, like, you know, as you've just mentioned, you know, and very eloquently put it, there are far more important things going on in fans' lives, and like you say, whether or not they can claim 3 points for a win for a previous game. Yeah. But is there an air at CONMEBOL of, well, actually, you know, society, politics is running such a way that at least if we just have some sort of functioning football, professional football league, that's got to be better. I suppose it's almost like taking advantage of the social situation within their territories.
I guess that to an extent, I mean, in a cynical way, you could argue that they might be enjoying the fact that no one can get a movement together against them, yeah. So they can kind of continue along there, do whatever they're doing, because ultimately no one has the time to complain.
Yes.
That is, you know, cynical yet believable rationale. But at the same time, I guess they will also be thinking, look, well, at least we're not corrupt anymore, although they might be. Yeah. You know, and Messi came out and said, you know, last year they're corrupt, and you know, Argentina got all the decisions, referee was rubbish, and said that, and got banned for 3 months. And then you have, like, and again, that punishment, 3 months ban. It's like, okay, well, at least we're disciplining people. We didn't used to do that, but now we are. And you can't play ineligible players anymore, but because, you know, we don't have a registration system that makes that impossible anyway. So again, we're dealing with, like, things that, you know, it's like, imagine if we found out that Chelsea fielded an ineligible player in the Champions League. Just it's so outside of our realm of expectation of, like, how our UEFA runs the Champions League. So, but again, I'd be reluctant to say UEFA are any better, because they're just kind of they just have a different sort of level of decisions to make poorly.
Yeah.
Chief, that's magnificently as well.
Yeah. They just got a different set of decisions they're getting all the wrong as well.
Because obviously, you know, we're talking about here, you know, things that aren't done very well, and it's, you know, perhaps that might claim, say, you know, words to the effect of, you know, we might be crap, but at least we're not crooked anymore.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, there are still scandals that happened in the CONMEBOL. So I want to sort of flag up the, forgive my pronunciation here, is it Odebrecht?
Yes, Odebrecht scandal. So this isn't sort of inside comable, but it's kind of reflective of the sort of situation, and it links into what we've been talking about, where, you know, we've been talking about a situation where people have bigger fish to fry, and the Odebrecht scandal is something that's kind of plagued South America for a while. It's just worth mentioning, because when we're talking about why doesn't CONMEBOL work, why aren't people moving against them, why aren't they changing? Well, if you look at the number of Peruvian presidents in the last 2 to 3 decades who have either killed themselves to avoid arrest or imprisoned for the mass sterilization of indigenous women, or were embroiled in bribery with the Odebrecht company, which, by the way, was basically a big company that would pay bribes to South American leaders in return for inflated contracts, and essentially embroiled all sorts of chaos, and talking about highways through the Amazon and all of that, and just big money flying about the place, one way bribes, the other way inflated contracts, like I said. So we're talking about a situation where for a long time, even, and I did a piece on this when Peru qualified for the World Cup, that was a good moment for them, and we're seeing Peru come through with this brilliant team, and they were so good, and so the fans are so brilliant, and they were enjoying their football so much, and we were like, where have these guys been for so long? It's like, well, they've had more important, there have been bigger things in Peru than football, and again, it comes down to the fact that when England are playing a World Cup, or when England are qualifying for World Cup for that weekend, that probably is the biggest thing for us when there's a World Cup going on in England. You know, we have that luxury. But, you know, when you're sort of talking about, you know, you've had yet another previously elected president, you know, go down for something. And it actually, I think it was 3 months after I wrote that piece about how great Peru were doing right now that their president got embroiled in the Odebrecht scandal. So it's just one step forward, two steps back constantly. And so CONMEBOL can kind of slip under the radar here. It's like, well, there's everything else is burning, so we can burn too, but if we're a smaller fire, then people won't put us out. And so they've kind of had this. And that's not to say there aren't people working for CONMEBOL who aren't trying. I refuse to believe that. I refuse to believe that the administration, even the current administration, I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt to, but it doesn't mean it's working. And it doesn't mean that, like you said, they aren't stuck in a rabbit hole of reactionary decisions. But when we're talking about Latin American politics and how it sort of, and how it affects a fan's relationship to the football, and then moving higher up the tree, its relationship to CONMEBOL, there is a trail, and it breaks when you're there's a flood in your region in Peru, and it means you don't have any food and water in the supermarkets because there was no flood barriers, and in a place there definitely should have been flood barriers because your leader's taken bribes from a company. You know, there's a point here where people can't be worrying about CONMEBOL, and it's so early on the chain. It means that there's weekends where they do get to enjoy football, and they maybe do get to go watch the Copa Libertadores. There's that, yeah, like I said, extra kick in the teeth that now that flight to Lima costs £900 and it's like twice the living wage in the most affluent South American nation for a month. And you had your flights already booked and your ticket that cost $80 also booked. And so, again, who's making these choices, and who did they ask for advice? Because I don't think it was anyone going to the game.
Yeah, Stu?
It's two things. One, an alert's just popped up on my phone that the Bolivian president has resigned. But that, it literally just popped just as you were chatting, then I was like, oh, what's that? Anyway, so the Bolivian president has resigned, but that's,
oh,
I suppose,
my gosh.
That's, yeah, that's, wait, I suppose, just sums up exactly
what
we're talking
about. 11 minutes ago. Amazing. Yeah. This is, yeah, I mean, this really, wow. That's huge.
That was, when I was just reading them as you were talking, I was like, I can't believe that's happened as we're talking about this exact thing. He's actually just
resigned. Yeah, we're talking about bigger fish to fry and the Bolivian president who was wanting to serve a fourth term when he shouldn't have even had a third because he changed the rules around who could serve how many terms, has just resigned. Pretty much in a microcosm.
That was it. It's almost like he was listening to this and then thought, do you know what? Yeah. There's no point. Yeah.
Exactly.
We're changing the world here, people. What I was going to say was, you talk about the, you know, the sort of the trials and tribulations of everyday life, certainly that luckily for us, you know, we don't have to experience, and certainly not in such great detail and sort of not as much a matter of life and death, but I don't for a minute, I never have thought that football cures all ills and, you know, oh, don't worry, you know, you've still got football, that's not it. But it seems that life in South America is, you know, there's so much turmoil surrounds it that actually CONMEBOL could almost be a beacon of hope, if you like, or a beacon of optimism. Or it seems, naively, if you like, it could do so much, although it would be superficial. But if it just managed to get itself right, it could be a real, you know, it could be something that people could sort of
it could
hold
be a source
to.
For good. Yeah. There's no question that Copa Libertadores, as a functioning tournament, weird as it is right now, where it's getting more and more coverage around the world and bigger audiences in terms of its global appeal because of Boca River getting so many headlines last season, and people are really tuning into kind of the sort of mystique of Latin American fandom, and kind of one, you know, it's mysterious. And people, obviously, with the world getting smaller and travel becoming much more of a thing to South America, there's more coverage. It should be a good time, and therefore, along with this, you're kind of hoping that the profile's increasing, maybe the players are going to get better. Flamengo have a great team right now that could genuinely contend with almost anyone, I feel, in the World Club Cup in December. If they won it, River Plate, I would say, probably couldn't contend, but Flamengo, really good right now. And so you've got this kind of moment where you think this could be a good one, and you've got fans who, and it does happen in the UK, and obviously life's hard, tremendously hard for so many people in the UK, especially at the moment. And that weekend, or, you know, season ticket holders, this is the sort of the break, and it can be the kind of release on a Saturday or a Sunday. And in Chile, especially right now, I don't know, couldn't say for sure, but I would imagine that a lot of fans are thinking, well, you know, we have to deal with this first and then football comes later. But it's probably, I can imagine it's a shame that that's had to be put on hold, because it is good. You know, we've been gutted when there's an international break. That's the stage I'm at, the level of like luxury I'm dealing with. I'm just sad that we've now got an international break. The PA will be back as normal and it will work and it'll be fine and that'll be great and I'll enjoy it and I'll, you know, be attached to my fantasy team. But there's, like I said, more going on over there. That means they can't do that. And yet, you think how good the Champions League has been to European fans recently, just what the Copa Libertadores could be. And again, it comes down to what we're dealing with is UEFA are making a different set of decisions wrong. But they are producing a world-class tournament. And then they're getting the other stuff wrong. Okay, fine. Copa Libertadores is excellent, but again, and it just feels like it's a wasted opportunity for it to be better than that because of bad common sense and poor decision making and in the past corruption and moving games left, right and center and not speaking to the fans, because yeah, you're right, it could be and is, you know, I don't want to take everything away from it, I'm sure.
No.
Is but sure, it's brilliant sometimes and a massive source for good on occasion, but especially in the last 2 years, there have been a couple of moments where you just think, what on earth? Like, what a waste opportunity.
Yeah. I'm going to segue into, you mentioned international football, I want to mention that in a couple of minutes, but for anybody listening, this podcast is being recorded on the 10th of November, and 22:15 was, in the evenings when we heard, well, 22:15 in CET, so it's 21:15 in the UK, was when we heard that Evo Morales listens to our podcast live. I don't know how, but he took Freddie's comments to heart and resigned because of them, and apparently he's standing for next president of Commonwealth.
It wouldn't be shocking, no.
I mean, it's sort of, you know, life imitating comedy. Yeah. I wonder if you can sort of move on to the national teams. Because obviously, you know, with Brazil, Argentina, two of the majest, you know, teams in, when you come to international tournaments across the world. So how does Commonwealth affect the fortunes of these teams? You mentioned a bit of Messi, which sort of triggered the thought in my mind. But how is the sort of the poor administration, does it affect the prospects of these teams adversely?
Well, you'd have to say it affects the prospects of the teams adversely. I wouldn't say that was unfair, because you have four current in the FIFA top 10. You've got four South American clubs, South American nations. There's only 10 South American nations, so that's remarkable. And then slightly lower down, you've got Peru, I think, and then you've got Chile like 16th, and Peru at 19th, and then you've got Venezuela at 24th, and then you've got a few others, and then you've got Bolivia at like 65th or something. And so you can't say that they're playing worse or they're not having their fair shot. I mean, you could say that, okay, South American nations haven't done brilliantly in the World Cups and lost European teams have won the last, was it four? And, no, it's like this, won the last four, 2002, the last time Brazil won it, and South American nation, Argentina, the only team to reach a final in that time. Brazil constantly knocked out by European teams in quarterfinals, semi-finals, getting thrashed by Germany. These aren't things you can pin on Commonwealth. They're just not as good. And the reason why perhaps they've not won a World Cup in so long is tied up in a whole number of other reasons. I would argue was more to do with the economics and infrastructure of what broadcasting rights and billionaires has done to European football and its club football, and how that affects national sides. But what you do have is perhaps the best footballer ever being banned for 3 months because he said we shouldn't play along with this corruption. So, you can't not listen to him. And that's not even me saying, I'm not even a massive, like, I mean, that was in a third place playoff and in the Copa America, and you've got Messi saying, you know, we've had decisions going against us. But this is like a civil chaos in terms of, it was Copa America, so it's all South American teams. Someone's got to win it. You know, Commonwealth can't, you know, mess up the Copa America so that a South American team doesn't win. It's not possible. But you've got Messi saying, okay, it's messed up. And it's hard with the track record that they have not to think, oh, you're probably right. But again, you know, if you're looking at the national teams and the players they're producing, I wouldn't pin Commonwealth down for performances or things like that. But the administration, Copa America, looked fine to me. But
Messi, yeah, I suppose you're saying makes perfect sense what you're saying, because, you know, the sort of converse of that, so sort of the obverse of that would be that, you know, UEFA should have be complimented for European teams winning the World Cup, and that doesn't sit well. So I'm sure what you're saying is absolutely sensible, mate. Stu?
Just a little bit about the Lionel Messi thing, Freddie. Do you think that was more a statement of, look, we are in control of South American football, you know, this has got to be almost a symbol of how seriously we're taking things. You know, was it an easy demonstration of power, if you like?
Oh, banning him for 3 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, easy demonstration, biggest name in the continent, and to say, look, like, maybe the old administration would have let you get away with this, but we are different and we are clamping down on all sorts. And to maybe, look, you know, the thing is what he was banned for is a couple of friendlies. It's not exactly like this damning condemnation.
Yeah.
it's three months in international football is like, I think that he missed fairly friendly against Chile. So we're not talking this huge statement of like silencing Messi and saying, you know, be warned everyone else if you talk badly about us, because ultimately it's not massive punishment, but it's still a punishment. And 3 months as a headline sounds quite dramatic. And that's what most people will see. So again, it's hard to say whether that was a real statement from them, but I'd question whether the last administration would have put a stamp down like that. But also, it's just, I find it incredibly interesting that Messi feels that way still about the organization, and I felt as though his statements came from something more than just the poor refereeing decisions that he had felt had happened, because the initial comment was about the refereeing, and the follow-up comment was about Comoro itself being corrupt. And so there seems to be more, and he's had his problems before with Comoro and about the administration, about international football. That felt like a sort of burst bubble that he was sort of been boiling for a while. Could be a few different things tied up in that, both post 2015 and pre 2015.
It just seemed to make it not an enemy, if you like, but to have consternation with, like you say, probably, you know, the greatest player certainly on the planet at the moment, and I'm not saying that, you know, they need him more. You know, I'm not saying that. At the end of the day, he's still just one footballer on a continent, but ultimately it was, I'm not saying it was a risk, but it just seemed, and you're right, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't missing qualifying tournaments and so on and so on and so on. But it seemed like it could very easily have, you know, if they'd made an enemy of Lionel Messi, although it probably sounds like he is an enemy of CONMEBOL, but it seemed a brave attempt, if that makes sense, for something that, as we, you know, as we've talked about the, you know, the racism in Bulgaria, it just seemed to be, again, I suppose, reactionary rather than a thought-out consequence and discussion.
You can't not do anything. If someone calls out your administration, calls you corrupt, you can't be like, well, yep, sort of up, and just not ban him. You have to do something, even if it creates an enemy of the player, because you can't just roll over and say, well, he's sort of, we kind of need him so he can kind of say what he wants. There is a catch-22 there, actually. He could, you know, just because it was the sort of biggest and most influential player that the continent has right now, they would have seen his words and that's going to get out. That's going to be global news, as it was. And they can't not do anything, even if they want to keep him on side. Because if they need anyone on side, it's him. But at the same time, he would have been a...
I don't know, perhaps naively on my part, but he certainly would seem to be someone who plays in Europe, looks at how the game is run in Europe. We talk about them being reactionary. He might, in an advisory capacity, and this discussion about, you know, why do you think this? Why, you know, where is this coming from? It just seemed to be. You've said that you can have that rather than what, well, you can't say that. However, let's, you know, what are your opinions? I mean, you know, for all his talent, he still, you know, plays for one of the, you know, the greatest club sides in the world, a very well-run club. You know, he plays in Europe. He could be, you know, hopefully down the line, he may well be employed at CONMEBOL and, you know, make a difference.
Well, here you have, again, a bunch of things that seem so logical, and yet...
Yeah.
Look what we have, and... This is why this kind of discussion exists, is because the pieces don't quite add up. Usually when the pieces add up, it means someone's getting paid too much money or something. And so, like, and I don't want to get and be throwing those accusations around until we know, but it's, again, it is confusing because you think, okay, and I don't think many really high-profile South Americans who've had their career in Europe would be too interested in full-time sort of professional role at anywhere. So I think he'll stay in Europe probably, or maybe he'll go back to Argentina and live quite a quiet lifestyle. But certainly someone you'd like to think, well, it would certainly be a good PR move anyway to make it look like you've listened to him.
Yes.
But then again, at the same time, you've got the South America's most populous nation in Brazil, who probably would not necessarily respond brilliantly to Messi having his word taken as gospel and CONMEBOL. So you're also dealing with that kind of fierce rivalry. You know, we know how Brazilians feel about Maradona and how Argentinians feel about Pelé. There's a lot of bad blood there. And so to give any one player that kind of influence would be seen as quite controversial. But at the same time, the players aren't being asked, the fans aren't being asked, so who's being asked? And there is a missing link here, and this is ultimately why it's such a frustrating point of debate, because what is going on and why are all the decisions made seem to be so like weirdly poor? And when these are professionals who have backgrounds in relevant organizations, how have you come to this then? Why is the final in Madrid? You know, this is, and something's missing. There is a missing piece to this, and that's why when you can spell out the logical step paths, and then but then it's like, yeah, well, we could have done that 2 years ago, and with any given event, we could say, isn't it obvious that Bulgaria should be given a substantial punishment by UEFA for that, and yet. $64,000 was it or something? I don't know what it was. It was not much, though.
One thing that has come through in a few answers that you've given here is that, you know, the amount of interest they have in South America about maladministration by a CONMEBOL is, you know, is perhaps governed more by the circumstances of the societies over there, and, you know, and perhaps the European football fans' dislike of UEFA is very much a first world problem, you know, because, you know, it's not a case of not having enough food to eat and where you're going to family going to live, and you know, I would say not in corrupt governments, because that would be too simplistic and not true, because there's so many sort of corrupt governments these days, and especially in Europe. But how do you see this panning out in the future? I mean, CONMEBOL is less than satisfactory, shall we say? Even no matter whether it's sort of flagged up as a big issue in South America, it's true nonetheless. So is there any prospect of this changing?
It feels like it's the kind of thing that will get probably worse before it gets better. And I would say, watch the space on the Copa Libertadores final. Do the fans get to the stadium? Does the stadium stay intact for the 90 minutes? It feels like it might get worse and something catastrophic could happen before there's any sort of serious change. Because at the moment, the movement and the momentum is not with making CONMEBOL change. It's making more important things change. And as you said, yeah, we and there are plenty of people who are worried about all over Europe about the same things people are worried about in Latin America, but we can look at UEFA and say, and have the privilege of challenging them, but the racism thing is a huge problem, and Bulgaria should be punished. They're not better. It's just different, and just by asking whether you think CONMEBOL will change, you got to say I'd answer that with the same well. It feels like they change in the same way that what's going to make UEFA change. And we've been thinking about UEFA because we've been quite, you know, clued in with this, you know, what's been happening with the whole Bulgaria thing. And you think, what would make them change? And we keep coming down to this thing. What if people walked off the pitch? What if they actually refused to play? We're waiting for this kind of big, big statement that really hits UEFA where it hurts, which is ultimately pockets, and waiting and thinking, okay, we're hoping for that. It's like walk off, and then we've got this big moment, potentially, like, or watershed moment, and that feels like, just like we feel like with UEFA, something maybe worse is going to happen, sparking a bigger reaction. And the same goes for CONMEBOL, I personally think. That being said, who knows, maybe they'll get a great president and he'll sort it all out.
It's interesting. I mean, you mentioned about walking off, and I mean, was it last week, or a week before that, did Balotelli walk to be arrested, and it didn't make a great deal of difference. And in fact, his own club supporters ended up supporting the opposition's fans, you know.
We've got Italy, and that is, they are on a different right now, not covering themselves in any sort of glory, with various statements made about Lukaku and Balotelli and sets of fans, owners and managers, none of which have done anything to improve the reputation of Serie A in this season. But,
I absolutely agree with what you said about, you know, with, I'm going to drift the subject a little bit here, but I want to sort of bring it back in a second, about the only way to hurt, to make UEFA change is financially, because that's, let's face it, UEFA is a monstrously wealthy, megalithic organisation, but football is mere, it's not the end, it's the means to the end. The end is money, you know, to UEFA. How sort of financially, this is where I'm sort of bring it back to CONMEBOL, how do you, with CONMEBOL, are they sort of similarly wealthy?
I would not say similarly wealthy, but I would say the motivations are not, like you said, what you just said about means to an end, the end is profit or the end is money.
Yeah.
That's also that rings true. It's just, you know, to say any part of football in South America is similarly wealthy to Europe, I don't know if that's the case, but then saying you don't know what kind of money's been passed around behind the scenes, and these things constantly giving the benefit of the doubt. You think no, not this time, and then turns out the president of anyone, of any nation, of any organization has done all this and that. So that's what I'd say. So they probably operate. Because if you look, there are the major similarities. Are just, think, who are you listening to here when you make these choices? And if it were the fans, then the fans' decision wouldn't necessarily be the most profitable one. If you're asking someone within the company, it probably is.
Yeah. Fair comment, mate. Stu?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I think it's you that came up with reference the quote, Gary, about football being the opium of the masses. It just seems that, I just think that the human race seems to have an inability to totally walk away from football. It's almost like, you know, we need this massive movement and this, you know, this huge public response, but I think the football as a drug is just too difficult to give up. And when you know, we've talked about it, about football in this country, certainly through the 70s and 80s, and when times are bleak, you know, football is the thing that every other Saturday that you have to cling to. And, you know, and it's just too difficult to give up. And what happens, you end up putting up with a lesser and lesser version over time. But because the game's still there, it just seems like you say, I don't see the people walking away from it, but like you say, but it is ultimately possibly what needs to happen in terms of making this huge change that obviously needs to happen.
Yeah, we are slaves to it in the same way that we're slaves to a sort of level of consumerism that makes climate change a real problem. It's an issue where we've kind of grown up and lived in like a sort of part of a system by which we as the individual are told we need to give up the thing that we like to save the planet and also to save football. It's not top down. We're told we're the ones with the power, but there's UEFA with the power to change it all without millions sacrificing the only thing they might love. And the same as happens in South America, and so the same is true for pollution and climate change and all the rest of it. You know, these issues are sort of 10 a penny, and football is one of them. And as we suffer through greater and greater changes that sort of changes football from being what we really loved, and yet we still have to watch it more and more every week. I have all sorts of ideas about the rise of fantasy football tied in with this.
it's an interesting one. You sort of bring in climate change. I know there was a survey I saw in the paper a few months ago, and it said something. I can't read the exact figures, but words along the lines of, so like 78% of people surveyed said they'd be happy to pay more at a shop to have a recyclable bag rather than plastic bag. And my question is that is, well, if that's the case, why the bloody hell don't you do it then? Because it's not that difficult to do that. Take a paper bag with you, but it's like you say, it's massively changing the habits of a lifetime, and we love football so much. And we don't want to. We want it to change, but we don't want it to have to do it, you know. And it's like public transport, you know. Everybody would say, should more people use public transport? Of course they should, but I don't mean me. Everybody else for me.
Someone surveys an English football fan and says, you know, would you watch less football if the game was going to change to a greater version of it? I'm sure we'd all be like, yeah, okay, I could give up, you know, and then we wouldn't. We want to know if we got... how the team has done it. It's very different, and there have been changes, especially like people can change habits, but there has to be a motive, and in the use of recyclable bags, for example, there is this motive because there is the idea because the atmosphere is not commable. We actually have a tiny amount of power. There is something there, so there is this motive. This will make a difference. But in football, there isn't any of that. There is, because ultimately UEFA can do what they want, and the power of not watching a football match feels very abstract and not tangible.
Yeah, I guess it's a little like there was the sort of issue. Well, it's still issue now of, you know, smoking cigarettes will kill a lot of people. Well, okay, then ban them. Well, we've got freedom of choice. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing, you know. And at the end, you know, if people want to make conscious move to change, they will. But people don't want to do it. Well, it's a really fascinating aspect of, you know, the sort of conversation we've had. Time is always an irony to me on this, but, you know, I mean, personally, I've had a massive, massively enjoyable hour or so of talking to you now. And, you know, Stu and I always say, you know, each time we have one of these podcasts, it's like a school day for us. And, you know, you've been a fantastic teacher guiding us through the...
Thanks for your chat.
Okay. We always sort of end on the same question, though, so I want to sort of pose this to you now. Can football exist in a political vacuum, or does the passion engendered by the game too easily lend itself to being a political tool? So, in short, is the political football inevitable?
It's absolutely inevitable, and it's inevitable within the current, within the system in which we live. I would paint the picture of an ideal world where these can be, where football can be this kind of sacred or almost a... sacrosanct thing which was just no one uses as a tool, and we can just enjoy it on weekends. But the thing is the reasons why we need it, the reasons why we're addicted to football is because of what political systems have done to a people and do in Europe and in South America. So who's to say that if it wasn't political football, we'd even need football as much as we do?
Good answer, matey.
just like you say, Gary, you know, as always, these are, you know, they're fantastic, they're fascinating, you know, we always seem lucky enough to be able to get the best people, the most informed people, and, you know, and obviously same again tonight, and we've even managed to actually affect Bolivian politics just while we've been on chatting, which obviously is a new one for us.
I do my reading about that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few more governments quaking in their shoes now as to what we're going to talk about next. But yeah, it's been brilliant, Freddie. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you ever so much.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Yeah, I can only echo that. I'm a little bit concerned. I didn't know Morales has got a direct line. Apparently he has, but there you go. So that was the political football talking about CONMEBOL in South America. So, you know, massive thanks, as Stu said, for Freddie for his knowledge and his passionate explanation of the way the political football plays out in that continent. So all I can say is thanks for listening in, and catch us next time on the Political Football. Goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.